Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend Everett. Here we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm fine. Besides the fact that I pressed play and then you started just manhandling your microphone like an asshole.
I'm not even kind of sorry.
Everybody's going to love that. Thank you for doing all
everything
of that.
Loves everything that I do.
No, I'm doing all right, man. It's definitely like end of summer.
Oh, it's fall, man. Football is going. I had a fantasy draft yesterday. Saturday is our college football opening weekend. We may or may not be able to watch it. There's a whole thing.
What's the whole thing?
There's some like carrier issues with Comcast and the Big Ten. I don't know.
Well, I will be able to watch it.
And why is that?
Because I will be at the game.
Oh.
Because I'm a season ticket holder to the Oregon Ducks football games.
Oh, shucks.
It's pretty. Andrew, I think we talked about this, but I just looked and my seats right now are going on SeatGeek, not my seats, but comparable seats in my row are going for $3,000 per ticket for the Ohio State game. And I have four of them. I have two of them technically, but
you could get them on board.
Yeah. So it was the kind of thing I was like, well, it's $1,200 and probably if we're selling four, we could even like eke it up, you know, so maybe like $1,300 that we could get. And it's like, well, that's like almost, I mean, it's a lot of money. It would be, we would.
You stand pay, to make $12,000 for that game.
We would pay for our season and then get a lot more. So it's tempting, but I want to go to the Ducks Ohio State game.
Yeah.
I want to go.
I think this is the season to go. Subsequent seasons, because these two teams are going to be annually preseason ranked top 10, just based on, like with the new NIL changes, like neither of these teams are going to fall out of the top 25 preseason rankings and likely not out of the top 10.
It seems like these are going to be perennial sort of playoff candidates for the very near future. So yeah, I'm with you. It's tough though. It's
the first year in this conference. I would be tempted by the money. I think if you were able to just take it all and put it into a watch, I would maybe advocate that you do sell these tickets. Right. I don't see that as a reality. And I would say go to that game.
Yeah, and frankly, that's
take your good friend Andrew.
That's the reason we bought these tickets was to go to the game, right? So it's like, well, yeah, I want to go. I have been confronted by a number of my friends suggesting that they're the appropriate person to get that to get my second seat. I have only co-hosted 300 episodes of a podcast with one of those people, though. So I don't know. I'm not making any decisions.
Exactly. And only one of them lives across the street from you. just saying, not trying to like push you in any kind of direction, but you know, there's maybe a really clear decision to be made here.
No, I think for the, an IWC Mark 20 exchange, we could probably work something out.
In titanium.
Andrew, we're not here to talk about the Ducks football, although I would love to touch.
We could just pivot this. You know, we're 306 episodes in. Let's just pivot. We are now a college football podcast. Hello, sports fans. You're listening to 40 and 20. I don't have a good intro queued up. That was a miss.
Yeah, that was a miss. In any event, we're here to talk about watches, and watches we will talk about. It is a watch week.
Some things went down. Some low-key things. Some hyped things.
Watches. We're getting back into the season. We've had a little bit of a summer
when the Watches reprieve and Wonders hangover.
like this kind of the festival and show hangover is clearing.
But then we pick it right back up with Geneva watches. So yeah, anyway, we're not quite there yet, but it does seem like releases have upticked. I think that's an appropriate statement, right? Watches have upticked. I think given your seat of honor, it makes a lot of sense for you to start.
You're in the more comfortable chair, but I will start. There's an IFL Fratello Casio Moonlander collaboration that came out this week. There are not very many of them. What's the number on this?
What do you mean? What's the number?
111 pieces of them. So for those somehow unfamiliar, IFL is he does hand-painted dials for watches. This is a Fratello Casio and IFL collaboration watch that features a moon and a lunar lander making its way toward the surface of the moon. It's super cool. Like everything IFL does is like a little quirky, kind of whimsical, but also just really great. And this collaboration of seeing a lunar lander come to the surface of a moon on a Casio is a really fun. 111 pieces of them, and they're going for
just under 1,000 euro, so 980 euro.
Which that's in the zone.
Yeah, I mean it's a piece of art, and you know I actually think hand painted watch dials are something that exist, right? But I think the number of these that are available that have any sort of collector desirability is low. So IFL, mm-hmm. I think is, I won't say it's unique, that there are a few sort of well-known artists, but this is like a legit...
IFL's a player in the space.
If you want a hand-painted dial, this is probably one of the few options that you would be looking at. I frankly hate it. I don't hate it. I don't hate it for you.
I wouldn't wear this watch. This would be like
a
watch that I have, and I'm like, look at this cool piece of art that I own. But it certainly wouldn't be a regularly. What are you looking for,
Andrew? Have you worn a Casio?
Yes.
I have tried these on.
Did you lose something? Why are you?
I'm all good.
Okay.
I have tried these on. I don't actually love the case on these.
They're not quite right. They're okay.
It's a super popular watch, and I can understand why. But
they're a touch of a miss for me. This is a really cool collaboration. I think the Casio and a Moonlander motif is fun, right? Because it's a watch that's never been to the moon, has no it's a faux integrated sports watch masquerading as a space watch.
Yeah.
And is maybe better qualified to be a space watch than many of the watches that have been to space. So it's a whole tempest of things.
Has the exchange rate gotten weird? So these are 980 euros, but I'm tracking them for 1,117 on Fratello's website right now. They're still available. No VAT outside EU.
Oh, that is weird because right now it's USD to 0.9 euro. So that tracks.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's in the zone. Look at that. The euro's bouncing back.
Interesting.
I liked the one-to-one space that we lived in or pretty close to a one-to-one that we lived in for a while, but
yeah, I mean,
we're still almost a one-to-one.
$1,100 for a
hand-painted dial. I mean, that's kind of, I think, the hang-up, right? It's a Casio.
Yeah, right. It's you're
paying for your dial because that watch is what, $180. At retail, so you can get them in like 120, 140 zone. So you're paying for a hand-painted dial, and that's kind of a steal for a hand-painted dial.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think the value is there. You know, we talk a lot about like, the objective qualities of a watch are not the most important thing, right? There are all sorts of things that are more important than the specs.
Unlike an F91, where if it gets over $30, it's a piece of shit and you should never buy it. But if you can buy it for $20, man, that's one of the finest watches that's ever been produced.
Andrew, I'm going to talk about a watch that I really love, which is the Porsche Chronograph 1. So the Chronograph 1 had its 50th anniversary recently. And this year, the 911 Turbo, right now, the 911 Turbo is celebrating its 50th anniversary. My physics teacher, my high school physics teacher, had a 911 Turbo. And he...
The year they were released, too.
Yeah. He had a 911 Turbo. And he would... I think it was partially tongue-in-cheek, but he complained about the fact that when you got above a certain speed, that the spoiler would come out. So it had like some sort of automated spoiler and it wasn't out. And then you got above a certain speed and the spoiler would come out, and he would complain about it because it didn't get the spoiler wouldn't come out until you got so fast that you were speeding on his stretch of road. And so when the cops would see him, they'd know he was speeding because
you could see a spoiler.
It's like, well, we saw your spoiler was out, sir.
You self-selected.
Obviously, one of the coolest cars ever made, the 911 Turbo is, and it's celebrating its 50th anniversary. And to celebrate that, Porsche Design has released three watches. I'm just going to talk about one because it is the Chronograph 1, which I personally, Andrew, I believe that this is one of, I won't say the... The anything is bullshit. Anytime someone says this is the, they're full of shit. Or they're just in a mood, right? This is one of the coolest watches ever.
I'm surprised made. You don't own one.
I am. I'm a little surprised. You know, I owned that Dan Henry 1972 for a minute. And ultimately, that was my lesson learned in like buying the thing that's like the thing. And I wound up getting rid of it, not because I didn't love it. It was such a cool watch. In fact, it was one of the first watches that I sold.
I recall that transaction.
It was just so, it was just like, this is never going to be the thing.
It wasn't a long enough pencil to scratch the itch in the cast.
In the cast, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it was worse than that, Andrew. It wasn't just that it didn't scratch the itch. It made the itch worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you got close.
Yeah, yeah.
you could, oh,
like, yeah. I resented it for not being a Porsche Design, right? Or an Orfina. I resented it. And so...
Even though that was a dope watch. I mean, the alarm function on it. Like, everything about that watch is really cool.
Really cool watch. I have nothing bad to say about that watch, except that
it's not
it Porsche Design. It fomented resent in my heart. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get rid of it. We've got a new Chronograph 1. This is the 50 years of the 911 Turbo edition. It's made of ultra light. That's what they say. That's the marketing term. And durable, ultra light and durable titanium, and finished with a scratch resistant black titanium carbide. They've done this before. This is just a Chronograph 1. 100 meters of water resistance, 40.8 wide case, super thick. 15.5 thick. These are all thick. These are, I believe, 7750 watches originally. And so they're big. This has got a COSC work 01.240, which I believe is the 7750 architecture on this guy. But it's sort of that Porsche design.
It kind of looks like it.
In-house caliber. 48 hours of power reserve. It's got a pretty neat flyback function, which gives you sort of starting, stopping, and zeroing with a single clicker. The rotor is a Porsche wheel, like the iconic 911 Turbo wheel. This is a neat watch, and they're $12,000. They're limited, of course. I haven't seen how many pieces they're limited to, but I do know that they're limited.
It's like 500, and I think it was a huge miss to not do 911 of them. It's like, what the fuck? Like,
come on.
I think it's 500 pieces they're limiting. Yeah, 500 pieces worldwide. Strictly 500 pieces worldwide. Just do 911. It's a 911 50th anniversary watch. So do 50 or do 911. There isn't an in-between.
They're $12,000. They come with a textile strap as well as a bracelet. There's a quick release function. I mean, Porsche Design's really doing great stuff. This is a terrific watch.
And it's
$12,000. It's too thick.
Well, it's,
and, but that's not new to this watch.
No.
They are just, I shouldn't say too thick. This is a big, chunky.
Yeah.
It's a big, chunky watch.
And the quick release is not spring bar quick release. It's a push button quick release. I super dig that technology. Yeah. I think it's less prone to failure. Hmm. I don't know why I think that. I feel like it is less prone to failure.
You know, these watches aren't common enough for there to be Reddit threads about how the quick release fails. So I don't know.
I've never had a quick release fail on me, but it's a constant fear of mine. You know, and after Frank's not quick release bars failed on him, like, I'm just kind of scared, like, all the time, constantly, like, do I have my watch, my phone, my wallet, my keys? Like, do I have all my things? Like, just rubbing myself all the time. But no, never mind on that.
Are you good?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the push button quick release is in my mind, it seems less prone to failure, right? You have one mechanism that affects both sides as opposed to a mechanism. You muted me in the middle of a set. As opposed to like one that can fail and fail everywhere. I feel like it minimizes the points of failure with a push button as opposed to a compression. But I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm not a doctor.
So that's all I have to say about that. The black titanium carbide coating on these is... Like, if you've ever seen these old Orfina, these old Orfinas or the Porsche Orfinas from, you know, the 70s or the 80s, the DLC or the coating on them tends to wear off and patina. I think that because of this black carbide coating, I think that it's going to be significantly more durable. It's pretty hard, and so it might chip. I don't know, but I think it's going to be significantly more durable.
I feel like you'd really have to smack it to chip it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And then at that point, it's an earned battle scar, less of a boo-boo. Although at $12,000, I don't know if I want battle scars. So next up for me, I want to talk about the Mark 20 Patrulli Suisse. So we all know about the Mark 20 and the history of the Mark 20 originating as kind of a Dirty Dozen watch and progressing through time, being a much bit slimmed, smaller version of the Big Pilot and all of IWC's Pilot watches. We have this beautiful and fantastic, true to size field watch from IWC, which we deserve. And IWC owes it to the world to not just produce manhole covers as good as their manhole covers are. So this watch it's the Mark 20, right? It's a 40 millimeter case, 10.6 thick. Here's the exciting part. They dropped one in a titanium case. IWC has a great history of introducing titanium cases into kind of select watches and just, you know, dabbling in that titanium world. And this is the perfect application for titanium because it's their field watch. It's their small watch. Let's make it feel even smaller with a matte blasted titanium case. Here is the next level of excitement. It's this beautiful bursted gray dial as opposed to a matte black or a true black, or this gray dial is just fantastic. But it's a Mark 20, right? It's all the things we know and love about a Mark 20. Upgraded with titanium. Problems are two. Only 250 of them. And they're 7,000 euros. And here's the real bitch. It doesn't come on a fucking bracelet. There is only a textile strap option for it. And I'm so annoyed that you're going to do this awesome thing. Charge me $2,000 more. Make it a €9,000-€10,000 watch and just include a titanium bracelet.
Mm.
Like, what?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the Mark 20 is kind of an interesting watch for me. IWC released the Mark 20 in late 2022, I believe.
But it was an iterative design off of, you know, 60 years of watch design, 80 years of watch design.
When they released it, they made hardly a peep about it, right? We didn't talk about it on this show. Very few publications reported on it at the time because IWC just kind of dropped it. They were like, the Mark 18 is now the Mark 20. It's better in just about every way. But it's still the same thing. And the price really didn't change. You know, it's still, $5,000-ish watch from IWC. It's just, they're like, oh, now it's the Mark 20.
That's an IWC thing to do. They're just like, man, we're just doing our thing. And,
you know, I don't know IWC well enough as a company to know that that's true.
I've never seen IWC hype. Never once.
And even their watches are sort of like almost offensively boring and understated,
which makes them so good.
But yeah, that's my opinion as well, Andrew. So this watch is actually inspired by what I understand to be perhaps the most
sought after
IWC watch, which is known as the Mellow Yellow. This was a titanium Mark 12. That was co-branded with Saab, a company that doesn't even exist anymore.
Which was news to me. I still see Saabs on the road, and they were uncommon.
Sure, yeah. No, but the company's just shuttered, right?
I didn't realize that.
It doesn't exist. Anyway, this is a tribute to that or inspired by that, and for all the reasons you might expect. It's very similar to that because it's the Mark and they've been virtually unchanged, even though it's not actually the 20th version because they skip numbers. They didn't have a Mark 19. I don't think they have a 13.
No, they went from like 12 to 18.
Sure. Is that right?
The Mark 12.
It
went to 18
from 12
and there was no 19.
Yeah. And they skipped 19 as well. So
maybe there's like, hey, you know what? We've done enough upgrades that this is maybe we'll call it seven.
Maybe they don't release
iterations.
Maybe they don't like release. They're like, well, this is the Mark 19. We're not going to sell them, but yeah, this is what it would be.
It's not ready.
So yeah, 250 pieces, which is, yeah, that's not very many. And I agree with you, Andrew. On a bracelet, I'm like, yes, please. Not on a bracelet. I think this would be a pass for me. The price isn't bad. Dial's beautiful. I love a titanium watch. Everything about it's great. But
they're just
I want a bracelet.
Yeah, there's some key misses when you do a release like this.
For me, I'm going to take a Hamilton khaki mechanical over this, a titanium khaki mechanical over this.
I'll take the quartz.
So, cool watch, Andrew. I had it on my list. You had it on your list.
And you slurped you.
The Mark 20, I do think, is a watch that I consider like selling the farm for. I think it's terrific, but I'd want one on a bracelet. But give me the blue dial. Give me the bracelet. I'm fine with the steel case.
Yeah, it's the bracelet. It's, you know, titanium or steel. I don't really care. But give me a bracelet. At least give me the choice.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't take that from me.
Don't take that from me. Luminox, Andrew.
Yes. This is the second time in like a month that we've talked about Luminox.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I don't think it was. I think it was a little bit more than a month ago, but you're right. So the Pacific Diver series has been around for several years. It's sort of Luminox's like core diver, or one of their core divers. Well, Luminox has always felt to me like a bit of a bastard in the watch space. You know, their quartz watches, they're pretty tactical. And I just think it's easy to sort of look over them for both good and bad reasons. But they've done something cool here. I believe, and I've read this, so I'm not making this up, but I do believe that this is their first ever automatic watch. They're calling it the Pacific Diver Automatic 3100 Series Watches. And I think they're terrific.
It's they're good. Yeah.
201 dash movement, a 200-1 movement. It's a Luminox. So this actually looks just like the Pacific Diver in quartz. Very, very similar. A notable addition of a wave dial.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, interesting. Tritium all over the place. You've got combinations of tritium colors, which is cool. That's neat. Thank you for doing that.
The tritium tubes on the hands are so pronounced.
Yes.
Those are never going to die.
Well, they will die.
In 150 years.
Is that how long they last? I didn't think tritium lasted like, that long.
I think they're like 50-year tubes.
Yeah. Well, these are great. These are great. You can get them on a bracelet. You can get them on a pretty uninspired, like sort of 1990s Tommy Hilfiger strap that says Luminox, which I know that's a thing. I fucking hate that. A lot of angle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of angle to this series of watch. And the way the lugs integrate with the bracelet is they've done that thing where they squared off that they've squared off the lugs, but then like given you sort of faux lugs, and then they've used a straight end. Anyway, I'm griping. I think these are great. Decent movement, decent price on these.
I have two. One real concern. One is maybe not so valid, and then an observation.
Okay.
Real concern, 24 millimeter lug width, which means that whatever you get this on, it's on until you can order something else. And I'm sure the bracelet's going to be just fine, but I like to have options. 24? Oh my gosh. It doesn't make sense because the dimensions look pretty good for a 42 millimeter case. Next, it's 13 millimeters thick, which I can kind of get with for a 200-meter watch.
Yeah, I think 13 is fine. I'm fine with the thickness. In fact, I bet this thing wears borderline thin.
I mean, it's a 42-millimeter dive watch, and it's a specced-out dive watch, so I'm good with it. Next is my observation.
Okay. Yeah, look at that profile.
No, I agree. I think this is going to wear thin. Great. But it's also not meant to be a thin, subtle watch.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
Meant to be svelte.
Yeah, 13 millimeters on this watch, I think, is just fine.
I did some like real digging when I saw this watch. The Tag Heuer and Luminox logos are so absurdly similar.
Hmm.
Shape's a little bit different, yep. But at a glance...
It's a shield, right?
It's a shield, but it's a two-tone, you know, partitioned out shield, which I think is kind of unusual in a commercial space to have a logo that looks so similar to... And maybe it's that Luminox and Tag Heuer have never really been competitors. They've just kind of existed in the same place.
When did Tag buy... Heuer.
Ooh.
80s? When did Tag, I'm Googling, by Hoyer? 1985. So
yeah.
Tag bought Hoyer. So the Hoyer logo used to be just sort of the bottom half yeah. of the Tag Heuer shield. And when Tag bought them, one of the conditions of that was that it would be known as Tag Heuer moving forward. And it was probably something that was a little weird when it happened. Obviously, my experience with watches does not include any memory of Heuer being a brand independent of Tag. And so I've never considered, I assume it's a little weird. Now it's just Tag Heuer and that shield, they just added the tag to the top. 1989 is when Luminox started. So I wonder, Andrew, if there was some inspiration. You know, Luminox is a California company making Swiss watches. I don't know if it's always been in Switzerland, but it could just be that they were like, this is what we want to look like.
Lumi Knox.
Yeah.
And it was just, today was the first day that I looked at it. I was like, what?
It may not be that big of an accident, I guess is my point.
No, I don't know that it is. It's just, that's why I say it's an observation.
Yeah.
That's a good curiosity, one. Perhaps.
It's a good one.
Because nobody else, there are no other two watch brands who have logos that at, like, in passing, you could mistake for one another. Not that I can think of.
Yeah. Well, I wonder. I bet it wouldn't take us very long to go through like the microbrand watch archives to. You know. I started.
I'm thinking established brands.
I talked about this on the show, but I started a new podcast this year that I do with a guy here in Oregon, and it's an Oregon specific podcast. And when we made our logo for the podcast, I had these colors that I wanted to use, and I was just listening to a podcast. It's one of my favorite podcasts. And I was like, I'm just going to steal their logo because it's fucking awesome. And I think I can change it enough to make it interesting, but it's like a direct ripoff. And I did it as an homage more than anything, because I was like, if someone notices that, they'll know what I was doing. And if the makers of this podcast bless my heart by noticing, I would just be like, yeah, I did that because I love your guys' show and I wanted to do an homage to it. But it could be something like that, right? They were just like, Tag Heuer is the coolest watch company.
In 1989? Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Either way, this is a cool watch and it's an automatic Luminox. If you've ever wanted a Luminox and you're like, I just can't. I mean, I also think the first Luminox watches were like straight, were straight copies too. Like, I think that they were straight homage watches. So
their logo is just maintaining the tradition.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, since we're talking about a brand doing a uniquely mechanical watch, I want to talk about a brand doing a unique quartz watch. Hamilton this week has released the Khaki Field in quartz.
Yeah, but this was just today that they released this, right?
Well, today, but tomorrow.
Two days ago
for you listening. In quartz. And it comes with a couple notable differences. We have a 33 and a 38 millimeter case. And that's dope. That 38 is going to wear so good. I think even the 33 could be kind of in my zone of, I might be interested in this. And here's what got me really excited, because they're going to a quartz movement. They were able to reduce the thickness on their watches. We have 7.5 for the 33 and 8.3 for the 38. Otherwise, we have memorable or typical colorways. We have a black with a little bit of fotina, blue with no fotina, blue with fotina, darker blue with fotina, and white with Votina. And the whole thing is to kind of call back to the radium loom and stuff. And I get it, but just like, don't, why? I could do without the Votina on the white dial. The black I get, but it's not for me. But this lighter blue with white markers in 33, I'm pretty into that. Pricing on them is $395. Hamilton coming in, swinging into the affordable, like, try out our shit. We have cool stuff. Get a taste of the real thing for not a lot of money. This is a big thing.
I'm listening.
Under $500, you're getting into Swiss made legacy brand watches.
Well, I think it's interesting until you think that when the Powermatic Hamilton Khaki Mechanicals came out, they were, I think, like $500. Mm-hmm. So Hamilton has, in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, really kind of bumped their bottom line on their entry level watches. You know, you used to be able to get a Khaki King for $350. You're, you know, pushing $1,000 for an automatic Khaki Field now. I think their titanium mechanical came in at $1,200.
Yeah, that's where they land.
Hamilton's been slowly and steadily increasing. You know, when I bought my mechanical, it was basically new. It wasn't new, but it was like new. And it was, I think I paid $375 for it. So this is, I would say, is...
But that as a, an important difference there is that you bought the old logo. You bought yours brand, like basic, like new condition, the same calendar year as the new dial variation came out.
That's true, Andrew, but I had both of them and I paid about the same for two of them. So you can get a Hamilton Khaki... You can get a Hamilton Khaki Mechanical right now in the old logo for $409, in the new logo for $452. So
we're getting brand new in box from Joma. Hamilton, from Joma. Joma at $395, which means that if you're going to get them brand new in box or like new box and papers, you're going to be getting these for $300, $325.
I guess perhaps I'm not arguing with you, Andrew. I'm just suggesting that this is actually, I was a little surprised at the price on these. I was a little surprised. There's a lot of money for this watch, I think. But I don't think it's unfair or nor do I think it's a bad price. I was just a little surprised. Like, I think it's more of a, I think just as much of anything is a sign that Hamilton's prices have gone up.
Everyone's prices have gone up. You know, we see it from Monta every year. They're like, hey, just so you know, we're going up $250. Or
sure, sure.
Like, well, I don't know if they do a percentage. I don't know, but we just know. We know that annually. Shit, when I was selling beer, October was price change. Every October,
yeah,
you had to print out 500 sheets of perforated tags to go change all the price tags at every convenience store you had, because in October prices go up. Then they go up,
yeah,
different amounts every year to reflect, you know, supply chain and, you know, all the reasons. It's never going down. Like, you're never going to pay less than that ever again.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. With that said, I'm with you. These are pretty thin. Cool.
As if the watch wasn't thin enough.
Yeah, my mechanical, I think, is 9.5. So a full millimeter off. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, cool watch. I'm going to talk about Yema because...
We should talk about Yema more.
Why not? Yema, what a brand. These guys, I feel like every 3 or 4 weeks, Yema drops a watch, and much like
without pomp and circumstance,
IWC, it does not seem to like. It doesn't seem to me like they're really like going crazy with the marketing. Which I don't know. I don't know why I like that, but I do kind of like it.
Are we just missing it? Like, do you think maybe their marketing is bigger in their European markets, and we're just kind of like in the splash zone?
You know, I don't know. I actually specifically looked for this watch in publications, and I did not see an article.
There's not a one, just to be clear.
Yeah.
The website is the one. There must be a press kit out there somewhere, because we heard about this watch.
But we didn't get a press kit.
We didn't get it. No, because we're not cool, hip, or important. But we heard of the press kit a week ago.
Yeah, maybe not even that long ago. In the last 3 or 4 days is when I heard about this. So the watch, Yema released the watch that is called Diver.
which makes its search engine optimization not great.
Yeah.
Yema Diver.
Thank you, Yema.
Maybe that's lost in translation there. I don't know.
And you know, Yema's got their, they've got a handful of divers, right? If you Google Yema Diver, you're going to find pretty much everything besides this watch.
Besides this watch.
So what is it? It is a brand new watch for Yema. It's not a catalog watch or something they've brought back. This is a brand new watch. It's a Monin, they say, a Monin inspired case. Which, you know, if you know what that is, it's sort of like rounded lugs, usually flared crown guards. This is that. We've got 20 millimeter lugs. We've got 200 meters of water resistance. We've got the Yema 2000 in-house, which is a 2824, but this is a no-date version of this. I say 2824. It's a 2824 architecture, but that Yema makes in-house. It's got a terrific looking beads of rice bracelet, double dome Hesselite.
Love that choice for a 60s inspired diver. That's the option, and it would be really easy to go sapphire, but Hesselite's the choice.
I love it. You've got a great steel bezel. Not everybody loves a steel bezel, but
I like me a steel. I'm wearing a steel bezel.
You are. You sure are. It's got a great steel bezel. Dimensions, 20 millimeter lugs, 39.5 on the diameter. And that is not including the crown. 46 lug to lug. Modern cases have a great set of proportions, right? And yes. So you're not going to get an overly long, they're relatively short lugs.
It's just, a little squat potato sitting on your wrist.
That's right. I think that these are shipping in September.
Yeah, it's September ship date. I don't know if they have a hard date besides the month.
And they're available for pre-order now, although I am struggling to find the ability to buy these. You click on 39.5. If you shipping September 24th, you just go add to cart. So they're $890, which is kind of terrific. There's bad news.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fotina.
It is Fotina.
And it's that like... It's that like
deliberately. It's clearly Fotina
uncooked Oscar Mayer hot dog color. That's what I'm going to refer to this color as. You know, it's that loom color. It's uncooked Oscar Mayer hot dog. That's what I'm going to call this color.
Is
from here on out.
It's raw hot dog. It's a raw dog.
Not just hot dog. Oscar Mayer hot dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like very specific beige is what this color is. And it's actually been pretty common in the sort of mid-tier, you know, that $1,000. Hamilton uses this color quite a bit. Yema uses this color. I don't like it. I think this is bad news. If this had a green loom or a white loom, I would be like, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
But as it is, this is available just in a black dial with Oscar Mayer loom.
Yeah. And it's a lot of Oscar Mayer loom.
A lot.
Every single marker, and the markers are big with that 60s big white minute track in between the markers. It's got a hot dog loom at the 12 o'clock of the bezel with then white loom everywhere else.
It's not even loom. It's just so white pad printing with Oscar Mayer loom.
That's kind of a bummer.
Do you think that's going to catch on? Do you think Oscar Mayer loom could catch on?
I mean, our objectively perfect rating scale caught on.
It didn't.
It did. That's how people rate watches. People say it's an 11.
It would make my entire watch talking about career if Oscar Mayer loom caught on.
If we could opine significantly enough to coin a catchphrase, we did coin Sex KX.
That was us.
It was us.
That was us. Actually,
we're the only ones who use both, but
both Dress KX and Sex KX were us.
Yeah.
I actually think people use Dress KX more than Sex KX, but they were both us. Did that.
You're welcome, world.
I've read that. I've read that term on actually like big publications. Dress KX. That was us.
They need to be crediting us when they do that.
They need to.
You know, one complaint I have, the Yema logo.
I love it.
Give me the logo or give me the text. I don't need both.
I want both.
I don't. I don't want both.
I like it. I think they do good with it. I like the proportion. I like the symmetry. I like it.
I like the logo and I like the text. I don't like both. Everything else, and even though I kind of share your disdain for this...
Oscar Mayer. That's the official.
This disdain for the Oscar Mayer... The uncooked Oscar Mayer hot dog color in this platform, I kind of think it works.
Boo. It never works. It's never the right decision.
It was the wrong decision, but I think it kind of lands.
This is a good looking watch. I'm with you.
I think it lands. And for Yema to just be like, oh, hey, by the way, here's this one.
This is a weird objection, Andrew, but the coat of arms that's been hydraulic pressed on the back is not centered up and down.
It's not.
It's
it isn't. That's just a rendering.
You think they may center it.
Yeah, it may well be corrected in the final version, but it also might not be because this is clearly a rendering.
Yeah. Great beads of rice bracelet. Yema does a really good job with their bracelets.
There are only a couple pictures that are not renderings. Actually, that might be a rendering.
I'm not sure that actually...
We might not have any pictures of this in the
metal. I think this is a prototype. I think that's an actual prototype. So anyway, Yema.com. Yeah. There'll be a link in the show notes. That's all I have to say about that.
It is up to and including raw hot dogs. I'm for this watch and I'm for Yema. I want to talk more about Yema. I don't think that Yema necessarily gets our due regard.
You know,
even though we talk about him often,
Yema's good. We'll leave it at that for now. We'll leave it at that for now. Yema's good.
Next up for me, a watch brand that I'm not sure if we've talked about on the show at all.
Oh.
Kazepic? The Chapek Antarctique Flying Diamonds. So we have a Chapek. Chapek? I feel like I'm maybe putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I say Chapek.
I like Chapek.
Chapek.
Chapek?
That's what I say. I don't think about it as much as you have made me think about it in the last 27 seconds.
I'm feeling a little self-conscious about it. So we have a Chapek Antarctique with Aventurine, and it is just gorgeous, right? Like, this integrated sports watch has sort of been, like, when you see it, you're like, oh, this is this integrated sports watch phase that we've been in for the last 18 months has been begging for this kind of refinement. We had a Venturing dial. I'm not really sure what to call the style of bracelet.
It's a Chapik bracelet. Yeah, I don't know. It's nobody else does this.
It's these Chapik like U-links inside of the bracelet that are alternating brushed and polished. It's just this beautiful spectacle to behold that all kind of pulls you into this night sky aventurine, and it's absolutely stunning. And it's an antique, right? It's the stunning watch that we know. There's a black aventurine, like a black, and then it's like a little soft blue purple. It's fucking gorgeous. None of you, nor I, will ever see one in person, nor will we buy one. They are 42,000 Swiss francs, so a million money. Swiss franc is held on in their exchange rate. 120 meters of water resistance. Fuck you, Patek. And they're just fucking gorgeous. This is the release that, like, when you look at, like, Haute and High Horology, I'm like, man, you're thinking about us. You're not gonna hook us up, but you're thinking about us.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, man. This is just an absolutely stunning watch with the diamond and...
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about the diamonds. I'm just... Yeah.
The Antarctique, I think, is sort of in a class of its own. I think for a lot of people, the 12 from Christopher Ward was... like, oh, this is an everyman's Antarctique. They've got a, similar to Christopher Ward, they have a micro-adjust butterfly link. I don't believe they work similarly at all.
They don't, because the Christopher Ward doesn't create a gap.
Yeah.
And the... Chapik does create a gap.
But, you know, if you're talking about, like, airport stress relief, like, golly, it's gotten perhaps the most stunning micro rotor on Earth. The SXH5, which is, I mean, it is a work of art. It is both.
I think if a bunch of us went in on this, we could probably get one.
Yeah.
Because there's only 8 of the Antarctique, and there's 18 of the Antarctique S.
It's a platinum micro rotor.
Yeah.
With a free sprung balance.
So we could, like, NFT this, right? Yeah. Well, everyone can put in money.
You all own a little bit of it.
You all own a little bit of it, and I'll hold the thing on our behalf.
Andrew, I don't have any more watches I want to talk about. You have anything else?
Not really. No, I do have one thing. So Erwerk is a brand that we don't talk about often.
Because they cost many, many monies.
Because they cost all of the money. But they... So in... What year was it?
2014?
Was that it crashed?
Oh, no.
So there's...
1970.
In the 70s, an SR-71.
1970.
Oh, 1970. Exactly.
Yes.
An SR-71 crashed And every once in a while, yeah, a blackbird, which was like the thing. If you are somehow unfamiliar with the SR-71, it's probably one of the greatest, up to and including space travel, the greatest vessels ever created. One crashed, you know. Those kind of mishaps happen. And every once in a while, some chunks of this thing get found in Texas and people sell them. And ERWRC was able to get their hands on some chunks of the crash and have integrated it into a 10th anniversary electromechanical control watch. And they've integrated those chunks into this weird, into the little hand crank winder of it and into the bezel.
Yeah,
the
watch, what do they call this? The electromechanical control, which is a watch from 2014 or perhaps 2013.
Yeah, it's a 2013 watch, so it's a little late to be a 10th anniversary. It's an 11th, but it's a hard sell. the watch is super postmodern. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
I do really like that it has SR-71 bits in it. you know, and priced at 150,000 francs, I might be better off just hitting West Texas with a metal detector to find a chunk of the SR-71 myself.
Do you know anything about this movement, this watch?
I know nothing about it because nothing about it makes sense.
Yeah, so
it's this space age, super accurate, you know, mind your business, you can't afford it kind of watch.
I'm going to read from Hodinkee here. Credit where credit's due. These are the words of Mark Kozlarich, which not familiar with him.
I'm not going to link to this article.
If you followed ERWRC, you know their EMC, electromechanical control. Don't you know?
So I'm the
paren.
Asshole.
I'm in paren. Which has been out since 2013. The core feature. Okay, let's see if you can follow. The core feature is an optical sensor linked to a control board that checks the balance wheel's 4 hertz beat rate against a 16 million hertz electronic oscillator benchmark. An integrated circuit has a calculator capable of determining the differential. And with a press of a button at about 8 o'clock on the case, you can get the readout of the chronometric precision of the watch on the 10 o'clock subdial. There's also a power reserve.
Never mind that nobody actually understands what that sentence means. That sentence has 26 words.
These are cool. They're 150,000 Swiss francs. There's 10 pieces. It's cool, though.
It's got SR-71 bits in it. That's fucking dope.
It's cool.
That's all I want to talk about. It's just, I mean, I'll talk about the Blackbird for no reason at all. That's the last thing I wanted to mention, is that this bizarro 35-word sentence watch exists.
It's a beautiful, really, really lovely, very cool watch.
But and the problem with watches that are this high horology, that are this level of innovative design, is they can cost $30 at a flea market or $150,000, and you're not really sure which is which. It's got a little hand crank that like separates out from the case and boop, wind the fucking watch
like a Model T.
Yeah.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Ooh, so I have another thing. We are bringing a puppy home next week. I coached youth lacrosse this year with a fella who just kind of like oddly in passing before a game was like, "Hey, you guys want a dog?" A dog. I'm like,
"Nope,
not really." No. He's like, "Well, you know, we have this lab, and my daughter wants to breed this lab and do like a litter of puppies and do this whole thing." his daughter's in high school, and it's like they're kind of 4-H-y like people. And he's like, so if you're interested, like, mom is annoyingly lazy and dad is the same. And they're both chocolates, but we expect a mix of chocolate blacks. And, you know, we're thinking like, you know, July-ish. I was like, I'm interested, but I'm not a yes. I'm like, okay, cool. And then we finished the season. He went radio silent, and I kind of just like wrote it off. I was like, yeah, it's this dog's first litter. Like, you either get 9 or you get 1 or none, right? You get when you're breeding a dog. So he texted me like 2 weeks ago and was like, hey, are you still interested? We've got 6 puppies still looking for a home. I'm like, can I come meet your dogs? So we go out.
And I pet that dog?
Yeah, so we go out and we meet this pile of like a 4 chocolates and 5 black lab puppies who are all at this point like 8 weeks old when we go meet them. And it's just a puppy pile. Kids love them. Wife loves them. I love them. I laid on the ground and these puppies just swarmed all over me. Like they were ants. It was amazing. Even like as they're biting my face and ears. So anyway, we're getting a puppy. Next Monday, we're going to bring him home. Which prompted me to break out all of my dog training books from the last time we tried to get puppies. And in 2011, we had a really traumatic, like for most of the year, in 2012. So like all of 2011, we're researching puppies. We find this breeder. They're AKC. These are like credentialed, hot shit, champion litter, like lineage dogs. And we put down a fuck ton of money in deposit. And the puppies we got were just not quite right. And we take them to the vet, because that's what you do. You get a puppy, you take them to the vet. And the vet's like, you need to take these dogs back. They're blind and they have vertigo. So they had this like congenital eye defect that it was a whole thing. And it like ruined this family, because that was their whole livelihood, was breeding these dogs. And they couldn't breed these dogs anymore because hereditary thing just showed up in a whole litter. The entire like 9 puppies had this issue, which sucked. But anyway, I had all these books of like training your hunting dogs. So I broke out my hunting dog books. And I have this book from 1983, How to Train Your Own Gun Dog, by a fellow named Charles S. Goodall, who was a renowned hunting dog trainer, and sourced a bunch of other people to kind of help him write this book. And it's this really well laid out how to train your gun dog. And he breaks it down into 3 categories: pointing dogs, spaniels, and retrievers. So it's 3 small books with kind of like a universal book at the beginning. As a part of this universal book, to show that 1983 did not age well. The shy one who peeks out of his kennel, or slinks around the kennel yard with tail tucked in, or cringes at loud noises, or spooks if someone moves a hand or foot, is a poor risk. And so is the biter or serious growler, or the placid one who is not interested in humans or his kennel mates and ignores the birds and the bees. Female members of the buyer's family may not agree with these remarks and are likely to say instead, oh, let's take that poor little timid one who won't come out of his house. He's so pitiful. This is an excellent time to avoid the emotional approach, even if it means leaving mama and daughters at home. So that comes from the section of selecting a puppy.
But he's got these really great, you know, like month by month training plans that are tried and true on how to very deliberately and intentionally train your dog to work. And that's, I think, the problem that a lot of people have when they get high energy dogs, especially working dogs, is they don't train them. They don't give them like a purpose, and their energy just outlets in all these other places. Mm. So my existence over the last several weeks has been really deliberately delving into intentional training of a dog. Because even if, you know, we don't go hunt birds, and bird hunting is far and away my favorite variety of hunting, because it's super active, it's super fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
But if you give this dog a job, suddenly their job can become just go grab this thing. And they're like, fuck yes, that's what I want to put on.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Yes. So anyhow, my other thing is dog training and intentional dog training from a puppy. And it can be done for older dogs. It can be done for, you know, medium age and even to elderly dogs. You can teach them new things. For example, my 11-year-old terrier is learning to now lay in her place. It's a dog bed, because bed is her crate. Mm-hmm. But her place is her dog bed. She's learning to lay in her place when we eat, because I am not about to have a velociraptor swarming around my feet while I eat. we're gonna have to rectify that problem here pretty quickly. But anyway, yeah, dog training and deliberate dog training and through not just like, oh, I saw this thing, but, you know, understanding the what and the why, and from people who do it, and especially with working dogs, you know, giving dogs a purpose so that they want to do the things that you tell them to do.
Alternatively, you can get a golden doodle and it will just
sit on my porch. That's his best trick, is that when he escapes, he comes to my porch.
He's like, I actually don't need any training. I'm just going to chill.
Yeah. Everything else is like,
can I go to Andrew's?
If I say this, this could happen. But if I open the front door, he will go to that front porch.
Yeah, watch. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to be such homies.
They're going to be homies. Yeah. They're going to be homies. I'm looking forward to that. The little doggy play dates.
Me too.
Andrew, mm-hmm. I've got another thing.
Do me.
I have been this summer in search of a penny loafer.
Hmm. With room for a penny or?
Perhaps, yes. Although I'm not going to put a penny in my shoes.
I have very vivid memories, and I'm sure you do too, of my dad's penny loafers with pennies.
With a penny. Yep. I don't know if this is true or not, but I understand that the deal with the penny is that initially payphones were 2 cents. And so by having a penny in each of your shoes,
you could always call home for a ride.
If you needed to make a call, you were ready. Whether that's true or not, I don't think actually matters. Okay. I was on the hunt for a penny loafer. Now there are a couple brands. Obviously, Bass makes the Weegean, famously the first penny loafer, and they are trad and good, but they are Blake stitched, which I'm not a huge fan of, and they're just the leathers are kind of shitty. So a lot of people would get Weegeans and wear them until they go bad. And I wanted something a little nicer than a Weegean, right? I'll just leave it at that. You can resole a Weegean, but anyway, I wanted something a little bit nicer. There are other options. Alden makes their Leisure hand sewn penny loafer. They're, depending on what you get, you know, $650, $700. It's like, well, it's a little too much. J.M. Weston makes a classic penny loafer. They're even more. They're like $1,000. Like, that's a little rich for my blood. I want something in between those two. I I wound up narrowing it down to a couple options, and I ultimately went with a brand that I was really comfortable with, and it's a brand I've talked about on the show before, which is Rancourt. I purchased the Rancourt Pinch Penny Loafer. However, prior to ordering from the website, I decided, you know what? I'm going to take a browse on eBay. In fact, I'm going to set up an eBay search alert for my size and Rancourt and Penny Loafer and just give it a couple weeks. I'm not in a big hurry. I don't need this till the, well, I never need this, but I really am not going to wear it until the fall. And I found a search alert popped up, and it was a Ralph Lauren made in the United States by Rancourt Penny Loafer, new or virtually new, but new old stock. So a discontinued made for Ralph Lauren by Rancourt Pinch Penny Loafer, which is exactly the shoe I was looking for. And the color was this like deep red. Anyway, I got these shoes. Kind of, I was like, they came up. I got them for a song. And oh man, I love them. I love them. You know, the nice thing about buying from a company like Rancourt is you're getting something that is handmade. You're getting something that is made with the best leather on earth.
Did you get the Cordovan or?
I didn't go shell. No. Okay. So mine is calf. Mm-hmm. It's calf, and it's this beautiful red color that you actually can't get on the Rancourt website. But that's not the other thing. The other thing is the Rancourt Pinch Penny Loafer. If you're looking for a classic penny loafer, now those the loafers are weird, right? I've got dress loafers. I've got a pair of tassel loafers that I never wear because I think they're kind of dumb.
Because they're boat shoes.
No, tassel loafers are not boat shoes. These are, yeah, they're more of like a dress loafer. And I wanted a penny loafer. I also have actual like camp mocks that are more like boat shoes. But yeah, these are a pinch penny loafer, which is, that's in contrast to a beef roll loafer. So it's a little bit dressier than the beef roll. Mm-hmm. Golly, they came in and they're just perfect.
Have you added coins to them?
No, I'm not going to do that.
So from my brief Google searching, everyone tends to be in agreement that it had to do with keeping change for a payphone. So if you want to be a real baller, throw some dimes in there.
Yeah, no. No.
Yeah.
They're my shoes. There will be no coins, but I love them. I got new penny loafers.
I'm going to go into your house tomorrow while you're at work. I'm going to put dimes in your pinch loafers.
No.
Yeah, you get free, no. 20 free cents.
No, you won't. Yeah, anyway, I got new loafers. That's
those
all
are good looking loafers too. I always struggle with laceless shoes.
Mm. I don't, because there's nothing to struggle with.
I don't know. They make me feel uncomfortable having no laces, unless like, you know, boots, like, you know, but laceless shoes, even Romeos. I'm like, eh. And I have a pair of Romeos and I wear them. I'm like, eh. I'm a grown up. I can tie my shoes.
Yeah, I love a good loafer. And I now have penny loafers. I have something to wear with a pair of khakis.
And you can put 20 cents in it to go towards a payphone.
Yeah, that's weird.
Because yeah, it's more than that to pay for a payphone call.
How much I haven't seen a payphone in probably 15 years. How much do payphones cost if you find one?
I don't know. The next time I see a payphone, I'll try to make a call.
I do remember. Are there payphones in Eugene? You would know.
I don't know the last time I saw one.
Yeah. I remember it was 25 cents and then it was 50 cents and then all the payphones were gone.
Because I remember dialing down the middle and leaving a really quick, who's calling? Like, you never did that?
No. Like 2580?
No. Dialing like a collect call.
Mm.
and you got the chance to leave a note, like a who's calling. And then when the person picked up, you're receiving a collect call from, hey, I'm at the mall. Please pick me up in 15 minutes.
Does that work?
He got me picked up.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
That's funny.
You never did?
What? No, I never did that. That's terrific, though.
But yeah, that was how you defeated the collect call.
Andrew, anything else you want to add before we go?
No, I'm a lot of things besides scamming 1-800-CALL-ATT.
Hey, folks at home, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Go to our website, watchclicker.com. That's where we post every single episode of this podcast, but also articles and other fun things. You can check us out on social media at Watch Clicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker. That is where we occasionally post pictures and updates of things we're doing. If you want to support us, and this is the only important thing I say in this outro, if you want to support us, patreon.com/40and20. If we didn't have people that were subscribed to us on Patreon, we would not still be doing this. Mm-mm. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.